Welcome to the Web Talk Guys World Radio Show. The show brings you a view into the future of the web and the internet. Because you can hear our show on the internet, that makes our show global. So thank you for listening today, and welcome to some of new listeners that we have this week, because we're on some new radio stations. My name is Rob Greenlee, and this week's show is available on demand. So you can go to our website at webtalkguys.com and download an MP3 file or a Windows Media file and listen to us anytime in your pocket PC or MP3 player. And you don't have to worry about digital rights or anything like that. So just go ahead and feel free to steal it from us and play it anytime. Share it with as many people as you like.
Yeah, we're all about sharing around here at Web Talk Guys. This is Web Girl Dana. I'm sitting on the other mic. I'm the female perspective, but when you come to technology, all geeks are the same. No gender necessary.
That's right. This week, we are going to bring some discussion about how changes to the FCC media ownership could change the web, and we're also going to talk about evidence that the browser wars are dead, well, at least for now. Wireless info on your wrist is another trend that's happening. And a couple of our favorite websites we discovered this week. And we're going to dig into our digital mailbag and see what you guys had to say this week from all over the world. There is a brewing battle online right now around big corporate media companies and their consolidation and the relaxation of the FCC's regulations that would allow for some of these big media companies to control most of the newspapers and TV and radio media outlets. Thus has caused a growing collateral effect or influence on the growth of smaller independent online media companies and could also affect the free and open internet. Our guest today is Lawrence Lessig, who is the founder of the Stanford Center for Internet and Society, and he's also a professor of law at the Stanford Law School, and he's made some significant comments about this online digital media battle.
Here, the extremists at the FCC have drunk this Kool-Aid of zero regulation, and what we're getting is basically the undoing of an extraordinarily rich and diverse environment for news and for the creation of culture.
We've picked up some tidbits from around the net this week, and in the spirit of sharing, well, here they are. The IE6 browser, is this the last version you'll be able to get separate from your OS? Also, Microsoft's Spot on your wrist. And again, our favorite websites this week. Rob?
Microsoft has made it kind of an informal announcement that it's possible that the Microsoft Internet Explorer 6 may be the last version of the update to the browser that will be available as a separate download. And moving forward, they're going to be integrating any upgrade to the browser with a new operating system release.
So no more just clicking at the top and saying check for updates or anything like that. We have to buy a complete operating system. Let's say this Longhorn that's maybe coming out 2005 or something like that.
Yeah. What's really going on here, and I've seen this as a kind of a larger trend with Microsoft, is that they're bundling more of their products, and there's a lot of people talking about the Windows Media Player could follow suit with this too. So you wouldn't be able to get the upgrade to the Windows Media Player to the newest version unless you bought the whole operating system. So this is not a tremendously great trend that we're seeing here, and it may be a fallout from the AOL Microsoft settlement here, and it may also leave an opportunity for a lesser known browser out there called Opera. As they come out, they've been coming out with actually new releases and upgrades to their browser rapidly, and that is available as a separate download. The question is whether or not Microsoft will allow Opera to operate on their operating system.
Well, I just want to say this is not officially announced at Microsoft. This was just a posting on a chat room from the IE program manager recently.
It's not necessarily a great trend here.
Hey, Rob, I have a spot on my wrist. Should I go see a doctor? No. What does that mean, spot?
Microsoft has made big fanfare about their new technology that they have called Smart Personal Objects technology, and that's Spot. And basically what they've done is they've announced that they're going to release a Microsoft Network Direct version on an FM radio network. So what they're doing is a deal with Clear Channel to make available a radio broadcast that can be picked up from these little wireless watches, basically, that you can pick up like stock information, you can get traffic reports,
music?
Weather. As far as I know, there's no music involved. It's just okay. Text-based information.
Oh, I see.
That you can subscribe to that will be available on an ongoing basis on your watch, so you can get updates on all this type of information. What they plan on doing is rolling this out into 8 cities in a test market. We're going to see it out in eventually 100 cities over the next few years. And the first watches are going to be made by Fossil and Sunuto.
Well, we, of course, always do surfing, as you do, and found some favorite sites. And by the way, if you guys have a favorite site you want to email to us, we're happy to share it. But Rob, you found one last night. What is that URL?
MyCatHatesYou.com.
Oh, that's bad. We have 5 cats.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to admit that.
but we're not crazy cat people.
We're not?
This is the most hilarious site. Just MyCatHatesYou.com, and you basically see a lot of pictures of cats with very evil intentions, and let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, go check it out. I think you'll have a good laugh. It doesn't matter if you like cats or not. I mean, if you love cats, this will be funny. If you hate cats, it'll probably be good too.
Another one is wiredvideo.com, and go to their clips section and click on a video called Funny Cats. It's about 10 minutes of sheer laugh riot joy. It's great.
It's basically cats falling and flying in all directions. It's kind of funny.
Now, wiredvideo.com, the one we just talked about, is actually the creation of a guy who created voicemonkey.com. Voicemonkey.com is our final clip of the week, and this is tremendous. A nice guy named Hugh has invented basically a service that you can easily put your voice messages on the internet or in an email. Basically, you call an 800 number, toll-free, enter a mailbox number, and you leave a voicemail. He converts that into MP3 format and posts it to your mailbox. We would love it if you go to voicemonkey.com, sign up for an account because it's free for now, and send WebTalk Guys a recording.
Yeah, so just give us your thought on anything related to the internet, and we may get it on the air.
And, you know, I'm going to talk to Hugh on the show. We're going to talk to him and have him on the show and tell us more about Voice Monkey in the future. Hey, we have a few emails we want to share with you in our digital mailbag as our printed emails.
We love hearing from you, so write us.
We heard from Peter in Dublin, what he calls Sunny for a Change Dublin. Peter is a business development director for goresources.com. He cycles to work. It takes about an hour to cycle to work, and he puts web.guys on his MP3 player, and he says, I listened to you twice, on the way and on the way back. And please bear in mind, if you increase the length of the show, I'll just have to find a longer route to work. But he has a suggestion for the show. He says, I use a product called Groove at groove.net. Find it excellent. It's a collaborative instant messenger document synchronization application.
Well, that's a mouthful.
He says it's well worth a look. He would like us to maybe do a show on it, and we just might do that. Thank you very much. Bob Rich from Terryville, Connecticut wrote us. Bob is the creative design director at loritano.com. Mm-hmm. And he wrote us and says, I'd love to listen to your show over my Moovoo. That's the Creative Lab's little MP3 player. It's the cutest little thing. He says he listens to us when he takes his break and goes for a walk during lunch. It's a 32 megabyte unit. And he says that his Moovoo works great, holds everything that he needs. He really loves it after carrying a CD player around for the longest time. It's like carrying nothing. He's just amazed that this little thing sounds as good as the reel-to-reel that he used to own, which was so heavy. It was difficult to pick up. I remember those.
Yes, yes.
He's been working at Lorinto for a long time, put up their website, and I liked his comment that Bob's boss likes to say that Bob dragged him kicking and screaming into the new century. Don't we all experience that at our various jobs?
That's true.
The techies and us, most people just, I don't want to read email.
Change is difficult.
Yes. But now Bob says that his boss calls him in his office and says, hey, Bob, let's do this, which is something impossible, and we need it tomorrow, some technology thing. And Bob just goes, this is great. It was much easier when I just had to buy watercolors because he's a graphic designer. Thanks a lot, Bob. We appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you for writing us. Those are terrific emails. Stay with us, because joining us after the break is Lawrence Lessig, who is the founder of the Stanford Center for Internet and Society, and that's at cyberlaw.stanford.org. And he is also a professor of law at Stanford Law School. He's going to talk to us about big media consolidation of TV, radio, and newspaper, and how it's going to change the internet we all love so much. This is Web.Guys Radio.
Do you offer presentations to groups of people and would like a way to reach a bigger audience without being there in person? The WebTalk Guys streaming video production services can help you create engaging, rich media streaming presentations viewable on demand on the web. We can video your program, include music, titles, images, even PowerPoint slides and embedded hyperlinks so that you can show your professional presentation to the world. We can even offer you a return on investment by setting up a way you can accept payment from your audience in return for watching your presentations on the web. Your package price includes digital recording at your location in the Seattle-Tacoma area and full post-production, all for just $299. We also provide webcast hosting of your video and many other options for a small additional fee. Hey, even put your entire presentation on a business card CD. It's a great marketing tool. Want to see what I'm talking about? Hop on the web and click on over to WebTalkGuys.com and click on the WebTalk Guys video production and streaming services link at the top of our page. You can then watch a 45-minute example of what we can do for you, as well as watch the video on growing your business in these recessionary times from the Washington State University Small Business Development Center. Contact the WebTalk Guys streaming video production services online at WebTalkGuys.com. Email us at info@WebTalkGuys.com or call us at area code 253-566-9356.
You're back listening to WebTalk Guys Radio. My name is Rob Greenwing.
And this is WebGirl over here. As you may imagine, media conglomerates are just rejoicing over the recent FCC ruling June 2. The regulators relaxed that decades-old rule that restricted media ownership, and now they're permitting companies to buy more television stations and own a newspaper and a broadcast outlet in the same city. The 3-2 vote by the Federal Communications Commission brought strong criticism from opponents, including our next guest.
While this vote will slow the expansion of the consolidation of radio, the vote could also be overturned by the Senate and Congress, so it's not really resolved yet. But we wanted to discuss how the FCC changes in media ownership restrictions may change the web and affect free and unbiased speech on the Internet worldwide. And to do this, we are lucky to have Lawrence Lessig on the line, who is the founder of the Stanford Center for Internet and Society at cyberlaw.stanford.edu. And he's also the professor of law at Stanford Law School and a well-known blogger. Lawrence, thank you for joining us and talking about this topic.
Thanks for having me.
Why is everybody concerned about the consolidation of media into the big companies out there? And why is that leading to your thoughts that that could cause the Internet to decline or die is what the terms that I've seen out there?
Well, there are two things that are happening. First, people are beginning to notice that there's been a radical change in media concentration in just the past decade. We've seen it first in the context of radio, where essentially three companies now own the vast majority of radio stations across the country. Secondly, now we've got a bunch of policy changes that the FCC is about to release, which would relax even further limitations on ownership that media companies would have. So we now live in a world in the United States where basically five or six companies control 80 to 90% of all media, talking about newspapers and radio and television and cable television. And we could very quickly move to a world where there's just three. So that becomes an extraordinarily important thing to worry about if you're worried about maintaining diversity and local input into how people think about major issues of policy.
Let's talk about why that's happening. There must be some roots in the past that have led up to this development where there's all this consolidation going on. What's your thought on what's caused it?
The most efficient cause, primarily the change in government policy. The FCC has been pursuing this, what I think of as just ideological passion for moving or, quote, deregulating in the context of media, regardless of what the consequences of this are. I mean, it's ideological, in my view, because it seems unconcerned with the pragmatic consequences of their policy reactions. I mean, the leaders of these policies at the FCC are basically extreme libertarian people who believe, regardless of what happens, you ought to remove all restrictions on the way that media actually gets organized. Now, you know, it's one thing to have a philosophy, and I'm all for philosophies. Those are good things to carry around with you, but you ought to be a little bit pragmatic about it and see what actually happens. And when you see the dramatic concentrations that are occurring in this context, you at least should go slow and try to figure out what's happening, because, you know, this is our channel into modern democracy is the opportunity for different views to be expressed, critical views to be expressed, and when you basically have a handful of companies owning all of the major channels of media, then that fundamentally weakens the opportunities for diversity and democratic dialogue.
So is part of the issue here that we live in a capitalistic society, and that's how a capitalistic society works, is the money follows where there's an interest in making a profit. Is that partially what's behind that as well? Is it when these media companies combine, they can save so much money that there's more profit to the shareholders?
Well, it's certainly capitalist reasons why there is this concentration, in just the sense that it's more profitable for them to achieve this kind of concentration. Criticism of media concentration is not criticism of capitalism. You know, we live in a mixed economy, and we always have, and we always should. You know, and a mixed economy means that we constantly are assuring that economic structures do not become counterproductive. And so, in the debate about media concentration, there's been skepticism expressed about media concentration, not just from people on the left. William Sapphire has this wonderful op-ed today in the New York Times that points to the danger to conservative values that's created by this concentration in power over media. Now, that's, you know, I think exactly the kind of pragmatism I think we need to have here. It's, if you've got these concentrated powers that are controlling the channels of information that people have, in effect, you know, fundamental issues about news and the development of our culture, then we ought to be concerned about that, and we ought to be much more pragmatic and sensible about making sure that that concentration doesn't happen.
Now, one of the concerns about this is how it's going to impact the open distribution of information on the Internet. And there's been a lot of discussion about that, that when you combine the power of television, radio, newspapers all into one company, there's so much power to drive people on the Internet to a particular location to get information that that really locks out the smaller media companies. Is that kind of what the thinking that you have of what is happening there?
Well, yes, that's right. There are two different issues going on here at the same time. One is that you've got increasing concentration of traditional forms of media.
Mm-hmm.
The second is the FCC's changes in policies affecting the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
The Internet, when it was born and when it took off, was actually very significantly regulated, at least at the layer or the technology layer at which the Internet got expanded. This was, you know, the telephone companies were regulated by the FCC, so that the telephone companies were not allowed to discriminate against certain kinds of Internet content. They weren't allowed to say, this content can't go through, or this content has to pay more if it's going to go through, or they couldn't say, these applications are allowed and those applications aren't allowed. The FCC required that they operate the telephone network as a neutral platform for innovation and content. Now, this FCC, under Michael Powell, has increasingly relaxed those requirements, which means that the owners of the network, cable companies and increasingly telecom companies, are permitted to begin to discriminate about the kinds of applications and the kinds of content that they will permit on the network. So they're allowed to say, these programs can run on our network and these programs can't run on our network, or this content gets to flow more quickly on our network and that content flows more slowly. So that they're basically changing the Internet into cable TV, where they, the network owners, control what the network looks like. Well, when you put these two changes together, concentration in mainstream media and the power for mainstream media to control the way the Internet develops, what you've got is the worst of both worlds, because now you've got not only concentrated media in the traditional form, but this new media, the Internet, increasingly under the control of the power of the old media.
Now, is there any way that the Internet can fight this back and basically maintain a certain piece of control of the small media outlets? Or, you know, and I think that probably a good example of this is blogs and weblogs as an open form of communication. I don't see that the consolidation of media impacting that development, but there has been some movement, like with Google, to be able to pull all that information together and make it available. What do you think about that development and that piece of the Internet?
Well, I think the way to avoid the negative consequences here is to fire the extremists and ideologues that live at the FCC.
Sure.
I mean, the problem here is the FCC is the single core regulator, and they have been captured by this extreme ideologue view that says that there should be zero regulation in the context of media. Well, the consequence of zero regulation in the context of media will be concentrated media that exercises control over the development and expansion of the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, that might satisfy some extremist vision about property rights, you know, but it's not at all consistent with our tradition of assuring that we have a neutral platform on which public discourse gets to occur. And when the Internet becomes that platform, and especially as weblogs become an extremely important part of that platform for communication, mm-hmm. it becomes all the more important to guarantee that the platform remain neutral. But here, the extremists at the FCC have drunk this Kool-Aid of zero regulation, and what we're getting is basically the undoing of an extraordinarily rich and diverse environment for news and for the creation of culture.
We have Lawrence Lessig on the line. Dr. Lessig is the founder of the Stanford Center for Internet and Society, giving us his take on the recent FCC moves to allow big media to consolidate radio, TV, and newspapers and how that may affect the Internet. More in a moment with Dr. Lessig. You're listening to Web Talk Eyes Radio.
It's Web Talk Eyes Radio. My name is Rob Greenlee.
And this is Web Girl Dana. We're in the middle of a conversation with Dr. Lawrence Lessig. He's talking about how big media has been given the green light from the FCC recently to push for consolidation of radio, TV, and newspapers and how this might affect the Internet. Dr. Lessig, I love a man with an opinion, and I'm glad you're saying all these things. I'm just curious if you've heard back anything from Michael Powell or anybody over at the FCC.
Well, the FCC is filled with extraordinarily talented people who, you know, have been there forever, and they think about these issues very carefully. And, you know, and I think the policy wonks at the FCC I've had a lot of contact with, and they're very open and receptive to try to understand these issues. I think the problem is there's a certain political spin at the FCC, and the politics controls more than what the wisdom of the policy is. And so I've never had a conversation with Michael Powell about these issues. I'd be eager to, because I think that, you know, he has the right intuition in certain contexts. For example, in the context of wireless technology, his intuitions have been exactly the right ones. But in this context, I think he's captured by people who have an inadequately pragmatic view about what actually happens when you change regulation. And that's changing the character of media and the character of the Internet.
Do you think that one of the reasons that we're faced with this right now, at least how it relates to the growth and development of the Internet, is that the Internet didn't develop as quickly as necessary and that there was given too much time for the media companies to kind of catch up, as they say?
I mean, the Internet grew in the United States very fast until we got into the broadband stage. And when we got into the broadband stage, we've actually fallen behind in the growth rates relative to other countries like Korea and Japan. I spent the fall last year in Japan. And in Japan, broadband is growing extremely quickly. Mm-hmm. They were offering 100 megabit per second service at about $50 a month. Here in San Francisco, you can barely get 1 megabit service for $50 a month. And one of the reasons the Japanese say that they're growing so quickly is that the Japanese have adopted the regulatory policy that Michael Powell is removing. Michael Powell is adopting exactly the opposite regulatory policy of the policy that in Japan has produced the extraordinary growth in broadband penetration. So I think we've slowed down in the context, since we've got into the context of broadband, and that slowdown has, combined with an increased concentration of media, made it easier for the media companies to begin to catch up. Now, at the same time, this concentration has produced some interesting new allies on the side of maintaining an open and neutral platform. Microsoft, for example, has become a very strong advocate of the need for the FCC to guarantee a neutral platform in broadband. It's not because they want to be altruist about this. It's because they've got very strong interest in the Internet being a place where they're allowed to bring out new products and the network owners aren't allowed to come to them and hijack them and tell them that unless they pay the network owners, they won't be allowed to bring out the new products. For example, when Microsoft rolled out the Xbox, a bunch of cable companies came to Microsoft and said, we won't allow your Xbox to connect unless we talk to you about special deal that we're going to have to strike to allow your Xbox technologies to be used across our Internet. Now, the idea that the cable companies think of the Internet as theirs is astonishing, you know, because, of course, they didn't develop the Internet. But now they claim, again, animated by this extremism in thinking about how property works, they claim that it's because it's their property they can do whatever they want with it.
Well, and they're actually controlling access to it.
They control
they're
access.
They're the gatekeeper, and I can see where they're getting that.
They think that they can do whatever they want, and the only point that people, you know, like Microsoft is making, and I think, you know, I've been trying to make for 5 years now, is if you give them that control, the consequence of that will be a radical change in the opportunity for innovation and creativity on the Internet. Mm-hmm. We will get not the Internet that we knew 5 years ago. We'll get basically cable television on speed. That might be great for the cable television companies, but it won't be great for growth and innovation on the Internet.
Well, certainly one thing about this that really hasn't changed is when you think back to how fast the America Online network grew, and it got up to, 30 million people, and there was a lot of people that were saying that they were worried about AOL becoming the Internet and controlling people's access to the Internet. But what we're seeing right now is that whole thing is dismantling itself because of the shift over to broadband. You know, it makes me wonder if we're going to go through that same process again where people are going to get worried about the control of access, but in the end, the open platform is still going to win out because that's what everybody wants.
It's true. There's a strong desire for people to have an open platform. But people can only express that desire if they have choices mm-hmm. about broadband providers that they will use.
Yeah.
And one consequence of the concentration and reduction of open access requirements that Michael Powell is pursuing here is that they won't have choices. You know, yeah. In San Francisco, we don't have, where I live, we don't have any choice about the broadband provider we have.
Mm-hmm.
And so to the extent there isn't a choice, you'll just accept the broadband service that's available. And if that service isn't open, or that service biases the Internet in favor of some applications and against others, or ban certain applications because it's not in the business interest of the cable provider, then, what are you going to do? Now, people say, well, you'll start a revolution, and that would be interesting if people did start a revolution about it, but I think what's more likely is that people will just, accept the Internet transformed into cable television, and that will be a great loss for growth and jobs and creativity and innovation. I mean, I think it's extremely important to emphasize that this is not a kind of traditional leftist, view about how important the commons is and all that sort of stuff. It's not that at all. It's about preserving the growth and innovation that the Internet originally created. It created that not by handing the Internet over to the owners of the network. It created that by keeping the network open for lots of innovation and creativity.
So is there any danger here, do you think, with the media consolidation and what's happening with the world right now with terrorism and the reduction of personal privacy and some of our civil rights, that the combination of the two, access to media and the decline of our personal privacy rights, is going to give us kind of that 1984 world that we were all concerned about years ago?
I think that there's things that it's going to give us that we should be concerned about. It won't quite look like 1984.
Well, I hope not, right?
Yeah, right. But it's, in some ways almost more dangerous because it will creep up on us as these technologies develop to surveil people and to gather information about people and to keep information tracked about people. Mm-hmm. It'll creep up on us. And, in the context of the war on terrorism, there won't be any adequate resistance to it. It's almost anti-American to question the war on terrorism.
Exactly,
today.
Yeah.
And in that context, what that means is the government gets away with anything it wants to do,
mm-hmm.
and we have no system for checking the government in its efforts here. And that I think, is extremely dangerous. And obviously, there's a very interesting piece by Paul Krugman in the New York Times about 2 weeks ago. Krugman's not a conservative like Sapphire, but Krugman was, is very concerned about media concentration. And he was talking about how the media concentration here goes hand in hand with the government's ability to push certain policies in certain ways. So he was describing how there's almost a quid pro quo between the news media and the administration about how they would report certain events, so that the administration would be happy with the news media and therefore give the news media what they wanted, right? So when the news media is beginning to compromise their own integrity so that they get favorable treatment from the federal government, then you really do have to worry about the extent to which our democracy is under threat because of the consequences of this concentration.
It seems like with what happened with the news coverage of the recent war that we just went through, that it appeared like on CNN and some of the major cable networks that we were seeing a lot of open access to information about what was going on in the war. But it seems to me that there was a lot of stuff that we didn't know about and that it's not as open as we think it is. And I guess what I'm leading to is, are we going to have the perception that things are more open than they really are with technology?
Yes, that's right. And you know, many of the people poo-pooing the idea we should worry about media concentration say, oh, well, we'll always have the Internet. So as long as we have the Internet, everything will be open and everything will be okay.
That's not really good enough, probably.
Yeah, well, it's not good enough, especially if the same media companies have the right to control the Internet, right? So the same companies that are supposed to be checked by the Internet will have the power to say, well, what can go on the Internet? There's this impression that the Internet has created all these new opportunities, and I think in many ways it has, and that's a very good and important thing. But I think that we've got to approach these questions not as an ideology, but as an empirical inquiry. Like, does it in fact produce more diversity to have higher concentration in media ownership? I think all the evidence is that it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Does it produce better news to have more concentration in media ownership? I think the evidence is that it doesn't. But, you know, I'm willing to be proven wrong. I think we should be proving it, though, at the level of evidence, not at the level of, you know, sort of Ayn Randian views about what the way the world ought to be is. You know, it's that ideology, that extremism that is terrifying here, because there's no way to fight it. You know, any question you have or any skepticism you raise is treated as if it's questioning the Taliban about their particular way of viewing the world. And instead of being, you know, religious about these issues, we ought to be pragmatic. That's our tradition, and it's that tradition that has produced the diversity that free speech in America has always evinced.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Dr. Lawrence Lessig, the founder of the Stanford Center for Internet and Society and a professor of law at Stanford Law School. We're talking about the recent changes from the FCC regarding big media corporations and your local TV, radio, and newspapers, and how that all affects the Internet. More in a moment. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Guys Radio. I have a tip for you that will cut your inbox spam down to zero, guaranteed. The solution is a very powerful software plugin called MailWiper, and it cleaned my inbox of all my hundreds of unwanted emails and continues to do so every day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. MailWiper currently works with Outlook and Outlook Express for Microsoft and supports multiple email accounts. Definitely stop deleting emails. Do your part to fight spam. MailWiper can be downloaded and installed in seconds and set up within a half an hour. There is no monthly fee or annual fees ever. Get your life back. I did. Go to MailWiper.com now and save over 40% off the regular $49.95 price. Get MailWiper now for $29.95 by visiting MailWiper.com. MailWiper comes with a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee and free technical support. Remember, save 40% now off of the regular $49.95 price by going to MailWiper.com right now. Web Talk Radio is back. I'm Rob Greenlee, and I'm here with Web Girl Dana.
We have Dr. Lawrence Lessig on the line. He's the founder of the Stanford Center for Internet and Society at www.cyberlaw.stanford.edu, and he's sharing his views on the new deregulation moves from the FCC regarding media monopolies.
It seems like there's an opportunity here for us to kind of move forward with the Internet and to produce better world communication, too. And I think that's one area we haven't really touched on yet is the impacts of what we do with this whole thing as it relates to other countries and how we stay in communication with other areas of the world, too.
Yes, that's right. And I think that the Internet, you know, provides an opportunity for much better understanding of other cultures. You know, Brewster Kahle runs the Internet Archive, and they have a wonderful television archive. And the television archive basically captures 20 channels from around the world of broadcasting all the time. And they have a wonderful exhibit about these views of these 20 channels around September 11th. You know, some of them are from the Middle East, some of them are from Russia, some of them are from Africa. And these 20 channels, of course, give a very interestingly diverse view on how those events were understood around the world. And a lot of that, you know, very strongly counteracts some of the stories that the American media were telling. So, you know, the American media made it sound as if the people in Egypt were cheering at the news of September 11th catastrophe. But in fact, if you go and you look at the news from September 11th coming out of Egypt, you don't see anything at all like the cheering. You know, that was just a handy way for CNN to make a flashy news story about what was going on in the Middle East that had no real connection to the truth. So the internet here provides an opportunity to get at the truth much more effectively than the concentrated and controlled systems of media would. And, you know, I think that's its great virtue if it's preserved. It's allowed to have that opportunity saved for the future.
Mm-hmm. I certainly noticed during the recent war that there was a lot of news sources that were in the Middle East and overseas that were covering the war from a quite different perspective than our U.S. media. And I think that's probably a sign of what you're talking about here, that there is a certain political bias that exists within our own media here locally and across the country that gives us kind of an insulated view of how we think of ourselves and we're seen around the world. There's a real danger there, I think.
Yeah, it's terribly dangerous because the most powerful nation in the world has got to be a nation that is open to self-criticism and open to the criticism of people from around the world. Because the most dangerous source of terrorism is not dynamite or not airplanes. The most dangerous source of terrorism is hatred. And that hatred comes largely because, you know, misunderstandings or maybe understandings of history, which most Americans have no connection with. Mm-hmm. And I remember after September 11th, we had a session here at the Stanford Law School where we just tried to get people to name the events that led to such anger and hatred against the United States. Just what were the things that they say happened? Whether they happened or not, what do they say happened?
Yeah.
And nobody had any clue, right? And that, in my view, is the most dangerous thing here. When we fought in World War II, and even when we were fighting in Korea, there was a clear sense of what the fight was about, right? We understood what they were fighting for, and we understood what we were fighting against.
Mm-hmm.
But here, there's such extraordinary ignorance about what the anger and hatred is about. And I think that's largely a product of, you know, a news media whose main aim is to tell happy stories about the United States to make the viewers happy because otherwise they'll change channels. And and the consequence of that is not a nation which is able to understand and deal with issues around the world, but instead is an increasingly tone-deaf country that becomes both more dangerous to the world and also more dangerous to itself. You know, I think the very best of America has always been a kind of humility, openness to criticism, openness to understanding what other people think. And America that the world sees right now has none of that humility, has none of that openness, is completely oblivious to what the rest of the world thinks. And I think that's extraordinarily dangerous.
Yeah, I think for years and years we've always viewed ourselves, I'm talking about America as kind of an island and that the world exists around us, but we don't really have to worry about what happens around us. It just seems like we've all lived kind of an insulated life, and it seems like that the internet is giving an opportunity to have that door opened up and to have more shared communication and shared understanding, but it seems to be still squashed. I guess the question I have for you is, do you think the internet, as we roll out broadband, as it gets more accepted out there and more used, that the internet will dominate what happens with even with the mainstream media? Do you see that opportunity out there?
There's an opportunity, but a lot of it is dependent on what happens in the next 5 years. You know, what opportunities are preserved for dissenting views, for dissenting diversity in the spread of these ideas. I mean, that's going to be, you know, the number of decisions that will be made in this administration that will affect the architecture of information for the next 25 years is staggering. And it's especially staggering when, you know, again, the FCC seems so oblivious to the public concern about this. You know, this media concentration issue is a perfect example. Michael Powell is refusing to have further public hearings about this because he's heard all the criticism he needs to hear, even though the Senate pretty violently was upset with a failure to consider more hearings. And again, it wasn't a Democrat versus Republican thing. John McCain was one of the strongest critics of this increased consolidation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they just basically draw the wagons into a circle, and they go forward with their policymaking, oblivious to the practical consequences of it, and that's why it becomes all the more dangerous now. And, you know, and the only thing to do is to change the policymakers there. Now, the problem is the FCC is supposed to be relatively independent, and it's not that easy to do, but that's what's got to happen, and it's got to happen politically, because if it doesn't happen soon, it'll have pretty dramatic consequences for information policy in the next 25 years.
What can our listeners do to voice their concerns for this?
Well, I think more listeners have got to become mad as hell and tell the world they're not going to take it
anymore.
Well,
that makes sense. Yeah.
You know, and they got to contact our legislators, and they should be contacting the FCC. MoveOn.org is doing a wonderful campaign around this, and you can go to MoveOn's site and, you know, learn more about it. My weblog has a whole series of postings about this, all under the MediaCon title. So, you know, you just need to become more engaged. And for every one of your listeners, I would say the most important thing you would do in the next 2 years is to open up a weblog. Start writing about whatever you're thinking about these issues and linking to other people and engaging in criticism about these issues, because, you know, our democracy's got to have a revival of engaged participation by citizens. We've turned the process of policymaking over to the lobbyists for much too long, and too much is at stake now to let that continue.
Yeah.
And Dr. Lessing, in fact, you mentioned your weblog. Can you recommend some other lively discussions going on at other blogs that you could recommend our listeners to read?
Oh, sure. There's wonderful stuff that goes on at something called instapundit.com.
Yeah, I've heard of them. They got a terrific site.
You know, and that's a lot more conservative than mine is. There's something called the Volokh Conspiracy, which is another set of conservative weblogs. Volokh, V-O-L-O-K-H, Conspiracy. There's a wonderful weblog called the Boing Boing Blog, which has really great, you know, mix of information. And that's, you can, on the web, that's just at boingboing.net. And David Weiner is one of the most important weblog people out there. He's, you know, actually started some of the most important software to help build these weblog communities. And his stuff at Scripting News at scripting.com. So there's a lot out there. You just have to go out there and explore, and it's very cheap. In fact, in many places, free to set up your own weblog. And this is a way of building real democracy by getting people involved in this.
Why don't you give us some of your sites out there that a listener can go check out and read more about the things that you're doing?
Well, if you go to my weblog, that's at lessig.org/blog.
Terrific. That's the best place to check you out, huh?
Right.
Terrific. Well, thank you for joining us. It was great having you on the show.
Great. Thanks a lot for having me.
We've been having a conversation with Lawrence Lessig and his take on big media's move into consolidation of TV, radio, and newspapers and how that will affect the Internet. Dr. Lessig is the founder of the Stanford Center for Internet and Society, and he's a professor of law at Stanford Law School. This is Web.Guys Radio. And that's it for this week. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to having you back listening with us next week.
See you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.